November 22nd, 1963. Dallas, Texas. At exactly 12:30 p.m., while riding in a presidential motorcade through Dealey Plaza, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
In the decades since, conspiracy theories have flourished about what really happened on that day. And even in 2021, numerous documents remain classified and hidden from the public, which may actually reveal more of the story. Yet the U.S. government won't let you see them. Although no one has conclusively solved this mystery beyond a shadow of a doubt, my guest today thinks he may be able to do just that. Ambassador James Woolsey, the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency under President Bill Clinton, is about to step into the vault. In his new book entitled Operation Dragon, he makes his case for what he feels is a codified message embedded within the Warren Commission report. Once it's deciphered, he believes it tells us exactly who was behind the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And you don't think I would get a guess like this without asking about UFOs, do you? Because that is all on the table. Stay tuned. You're about to journey inside the Black Vault. That's right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in and making this your podcast or your live stream of choice. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr., creator of theblackvault.com. And today I have a very special guest with me. He is the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Ambassador James Woolsey. He served from 1993 to 1995 in that position under President Bill Clinton. And he's here to talk about his new book, Operation Dragon, Inside the Kremlin's Secret War on America. Ambassador, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
My pleasure, John.
It's an honor to have you on the show. And let me also start by thanking you for your service to this country. Not only did you serve as the CIA director, as I already mentioned, but just to name a few, and I want to read it here to make sure that I have it right. You were also the ambassador to the negotiation on conventional armed forces in Europe. You were a delegate at large at the U.S.-Soviet strategic arms reduction talks and nuclear and space arms talks in Geneva. You served as the undersecretary of the Navy. You served as the general counsel to the U.S. Senate Armed Services Committee. And that's just to name a few things of your very extensive resume. So again, I just wanted to take a quick opportunity to thank you for your service to the country.
Well, thanks, John, for the kind words.
Absolutely. So you're here to talk about your book. You just released it here in the last few weeks to a month. It's called Operation Dragon. For my audience, can you just kind of give us a brief synopsis of what it's all about?
Generally speaking, it's about Russia's involvement in the continuation of the Cold War and how that is playing out and will play out probably in the future. The problem, as we see it in the West, is really that Russia has a propensity that is very difficult for them to get away from, dating back to Catherine the Great about 700 years ago. We're in a situation where Russia feels that it must function in such a way as to go along with the views of an old farmer that Abraham Lincoln used to quote sometimes when the old boy lived next door to the Lincoln family. And Lincoln said, you know, what he says is, I don't need much land, just what adjoins mine. And that is Russia's problem for us. It's not a crazy country. It's not highly ideological. It's highly interested in its own power, of course. But the ideological issues related to communism and so forth have been less emphasized, I think, within the last few years. It's still a problem that way. But the big problem is that it seeks domination of its neighbors and probably will for a long time and most neighbors.
Now, you co-authored the book with the former acting chief of Romania's espionage service. Can you tell me a little bit about your co-author? And I know you have a little bit of bad news about him as well, but let me know a little bit more about your co-author.
His name was Ian Mihai Pacepa, which comes out in Romanian as Mike Pacepa. And Mike was a remarkable man, extraordinarily fine analyst and operative in the intelligence world. He passed away in mid-February from causes that are not interesting, as far as any of us know. He was a good friend and a shrewd operator. At one point, for example, in his career, the powers that be within Romania decided that they really needed to catch him and kill him because they were having serious trouble with Carlos the Jackal, who was one of the most remarkable intelligence operator in world history. Mike Pacepa eluded Carlos the Jackal and got away. So he was a shrewd operator as well as an extraordinary man in general terms. He was a great assistance to the United States and to our ability to understand what was going on in Eastern Europe and Romania in particular. He was in many ways and is quoted on the cover of the book as being in this general stripe. He was in many ways the most remarkable intelligence operator that defected from Romanian and also, I'd say, generally from Eastern European countries in his getting by and helping us understand the general direction and activities of the Eastern European defectors.
So I'm going to grab your book here and I'll pull it full screen too on the video. But your subtitle here, Inside the Kremlin's Secret War on America, what brought together you meeting your co-author and what made you guys really get motivated to write this book?
Mike got in touch with me through a mutual friend, and we met and decided to, he's over 90, we decided, and he very much wanted to do this, we met and decided to move into a follow-on short book focusing on some of the aspects of Mike's career that he wanted the world to understand and wanted to get on the record with it before he passed away. And as with a lot of other things that Mike has succeeded in the world and his life, he got it done just a few days before his passing away. We wanted to do our best to leave an understanding of how Russia operated, how Russia's former colonies essentially operated, and how they were likely to follow through inside Russia and the new dawn of Russian independence from any other sort of totalitarian management. I think that Mike was very happy helping rewrite those last few days. And in general terms, we are talking about thwarting the work of the East European and the Russian characteristics and abilities. Mike thought, as this was all coming to a close, that we were succeeding, and I very much hope history will prove him right.
If you could sum up the core message of what you were intending with writing this book, both of you, what would that message be?
That the history of Russia and its satraps is one that the West is, over time, going to have to be very diligent and very thorough and very shrewd in dealing with, or we will fail. Today, there's probably more attention being paid to China. China has its own way of being shrewd and operating against the West, but Russia has its own way. And we were, I think, pretty successful, I won't claim total, in instructing people, helping people understand, writing ourselves about the subject, but being strong in our ability and willingness to help the West deceive Russia at least as much as Russia deceives us.
So let's dig a little bit more into the book. Obviously, I said the title is Operation Dragon. What does Operation Dragon mean in the context of this book?
Mike had written some earlier and liked the title, and my wife liked it too, so we went with them. And we're focused very heavily on deception issue. Russia is not a military power anymore these days, but they are a deceiver, and they're very good at it. They live within the deception world. They have a huge number of counterintelligence operators operating within the structure of illegals that they create, fully non-existent leaders individuals who pretend to be something that they are not, and they live within that world and recruit spies within it, do all sorts of things within it. So I would say that it's thwarting the Russian illegal services of intelligence services and the general and overall intelligence operations, and helping prepare the West for the next wave of Russian attacks, essentially, that will come, mm-hmm. Even if today Russia looks a little quieter.
One of the more intriguing sections of the book, as you deal with an awful lot, but for me personally anyway, is the section where you are writing about the JFK assassination, and you and your co-author are essentially putting forward And I'll let you take the lead on exactly if you consider it a new theory or supporting theories you've heard before, but essentially what really happened in Dallas. So if I can focus in on that topic, what is the overview of what you and your co-author were saying happened in Dallas and who was behind it?
Good question. There were two individuals who had a great deal to do with the stress and the cold fury and the general attitude toward the West left both Oswald as a individual and Khrushchev, given his very high position within the then Soviet bureaucracy. Mike and I went into this in some detail, and I had a real advantage on this one because my co-author was someone who knew most of the players in the system, who was very, very knowledgeable about their propensities, their, you know, Mike didn't just write out as a memo what some people thought might be the case with respect to a hatred of John Kennedy by other members of the group. Mike would come to me and tell me what he had heard. It was a very different world in intelligence when you can sit and listen to or talk to an individual that is trying to kill your president. Mike made that possible. We were eternally grateful to him for it. I think that it's fair to say that there were the two key individuals. One was Khrushchev. Khrushchev hated Kennedy with every ounce of his being because he wanted very much to get a sense of justice for what had happened during the Cuban Missile Crisis and shortly thereafter, insofar as Khrushchev was supposedly the mastermind of just about to take over the station in the West, and then to find that John Kennedy and his brother, by the way, that the Kennedy brothers were thwarting him and succeeded in blocking him with the quarantine from getting into anything that could be called even a passable outcome for the West. Because he was thwarted, Khrushchev was furious. He was so angry and hated Kennedy so much that he was almost completely irrational for the entire period. But even Khrushchev had a certain sense of soundness of mind occasionally. It was not real common, but it did occasionally happen. And he got into a mode of thinking about a year and a half or so before the assassination attempt. Khrushchev got into a mode of thinking that if he stayed on the tack he was on, setting aside men to kill Kennedy, setting aside plans for operations, if he stayed in that mode, he could well start some kind of war, and that war might well produce a Soviet-American military conflict and a world war. Khrushchev actually was a bit familiar with the beginnings of World War One, and he knew what might happen. So with real reluctance, he pulled back. And he was furious, but he pulled back. And what happened then was that the whole structure that Khrushchev had set up, which effectively marshaled the Soviet system behind their extraordinarily large and dedicated KGB operations, he marshaled behind them, and then he pulled back in order not to start a war. And once he did that, he was so furious, so angry, so bitter that he having needed to pull back, basically told his colleagues, told his subordinates how much he hated Kennedy and what he was going to do. He was going to go forward. And although he pulled back, he didn't thoroughly and effectively pull back. He let it go forward enough that he was motivated to continue to move against Kennedy and to carry out the assassination. And the assassination was encouraged by maybe not hands on the gun encouraged by, but clearly encouraged by the KGB and Khrushchev's command at the time of it. It was not carried out by the U.S. Marine Corps. It was not carried out by the CIA. It was not carried out by Texas oil billionaires. Essentially, all of those ideas are wrong. It was an effort by Khrushchev to make himself feel as if he was doing something good, and then to pull back when he saw that that something good might produce a world war.
Now, you say the evidence to support this in the book, the way that it's termed, is that the evidence resides in a codified message embedded within the Warren Commission report. Correct me if I have that wrong, but can you explain a little bit about what you mean by that?
Mike was always at the center of our discussions on this, and his view was that it was crystal clear to him and the others in the KGB leadership, and that it was certain that Khrushchev wanted this done, and he needed to move forward with it. Did he physically go and shake hands with Oswald and say, "All right, Oswald, go kill Kennedy"? No. But as far as we know, no. But we also, based mainly on Mike's work, were quite convinced that the decision was made, was communicated to the KGB, and the decision was made by Khrushchev to kill Kennedy.
But just to make sure I have the story right, but you're saying Khrushchev decided to pull back a little bit and Oswald just kind of was gung-ho going forward, going to carry it out because of what he wanted to achieve.
That's essentially it. Thought he ought to pull back. He began pulling back and it continued, however, to let the assassination go. And once he decided to do that, his fury at his plight as he saw it. Oswald had been successful as a participant in a very minor way in the reconnaissance work with a U-2 aircraft over western part of the western states, testing out new approaches. Oswald thought that he was going to be designated as the hero of the year and would be met at the airport coming in the airfield from the west. That all came apart because the aircraft didn't function properly and went down. But the main thing, the whole situation was one in which Oswald pulled back, and Khrushchev let him.
We'll call it a conspiracy in the sense that it seemed like in the beginning stages of it, it was a coordinated effort. Khrushchev wanted him to essentially pursue it, even though they didn't shake hands. Going back to the Warren Commission report, obviously that veers away from their determination, and I'm highly, highly putting it in a nutshell, but essentially there was no conspiracy, either foreign or domestic, and essentially he was a lone gunman. So again, I say, correct me if I am wrong, but this is essentially not what the Warren Commission had concluded. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on why is that? Was the Warren Commission aware of all of this and they wanted to deceive the public? Was it an American disinformation campaign, or did they just not have access to everything that has essentially come out over the last X amount of decades?
No, basically the Warren Commission, which started in March, really just 4 months after the assassination, the Warren Commission was staffed by three lawyers, no one with any intelligence background. It was not an effective organization. And that problem persisted through the rest of its undertakings and attempts. This is one of the first major events of strategic history, I would say, in which both parties, both the Russians and the Americans, were in the business of fudging things, or if you prefer, lying a bit, in order to avoid looking like they were at the heart of killing Kennedy. Neither the American nor the Russian government wanted that impression out, but Russia because they were afraid they'd start a war, the Americans because they were afraid the Russians would start a war. Mm-hmm.
And I can get on board with all of that. I mean, it's a fascinating theory to put forward. However, I want to fast forward then, because the secrecy surrounding this lasts even to this day. Arguably, yes, that Cold War is over. It's another show entirely. I'm sure I'd have a fascinating conversation with you on what type of a Cold War, so to speak, is going on today, if any. But that aside, that era of history has essentially passed. So why is it that there is such an incredible amount of secrecy where even today documents from the CIA can't be declassified, even though Trump said, hey, we want to release everything after proper reviews and security reviews and stuff like that in 2017 and so on. They released thousands and thousands of pages, but a lot is still being withheld. It's not every day I get to ask a former CIA director this question, especially about the JFK assassination, but why is there that secrecy surrounding this?
I don't know. I think it's probably about to come undone, because there is now starting to be enough events that people have focused on, particularly pilots, and particularly pilots who have a high reputation among their colleagues, that deals approaches essentially that more or less creates a sense of quite possible accuracy in the remarks and speeches and testimony and so forth by the people who've seen phenomena. And so we'll get later, I think, into that issue, but I think it's something that will change over time. As far as up till now, there have been enough views of what may be happening in the world or the worlds the situation will change in terms of what people believe and what they think is important. The rest of this that's been going on since 1968, speculations about John F. Kennedy's being killed. I'd say it's been going on at least since a year after.
Mm-hmm. And that's what always intrigues me about it, is because that secrecy has lasted. And it seems like when you talk about conspiracies and secrecy, you know, the JFK assassination is always kind of at the top of the list of being one of those stories that just is, I don't know how to say it. It's just flooded with various conspiracy theories and secret allegations and this, that, and the other thing. Let me phrase this next question this way, again, referencing your long career in intelligence in various positions, but specifically being the director of the CIA. I think a lot of people outside of that world would think that, hey, if you're working late in an office one night, you're the director of the CIA, you've got a special key, you can go back there into the CIA's vault, unlock, and just essentially access all of the secrets going back decades. Is that how it works? Do you have access to everything? And if so, did you peer into some of those records to see what happened here, not only with JFK, but with other stuff?
I made no sortie into the depths of the CIA building when I had the job. I've always been kind of curious about the UFO business just we'll have to see kind of where it all sorts out. But the reason for a lot of the sense of concern about the whole issue of is there a secret group of folks who know and so forth? All of that, I think, has been fostered very heavily by the Russians. The Russians are really good at disinformation, as they call it, disinformatia. And they have done a thorough job across the government, planting stories, planting ideas, planting books. 3,000 books have been published. And that's not pages, that's books. Mm-hmm. on this subject. So the Russians have very intentionally planted all of these stories, or almost all of them, and most of them are pure concoctions and pretty easily unmasked. No, Texas oil men didn't kill President Kennedy. No, the CIA didn't. No, the FBI didn't. It's just the issues that have come up on the whole have been pretty far out.
And let me just interject for a second. So all of those who are watching this and will comment on this video or on the podcast and say, well, that's exactly what you would expect from a former director of the CIA. What would your response be? Because I know those comments are coming.
We'll know more within a few weeks, perhaps, because there have been, over the years now, events of one kind or another, usually involving some kind of aircraft-like airframe, that has put a number of people into a situation where they'd say, like me, I never thought there was anything to all this. It always seemed pretty far out to me. Don't know what the reality is, but, and fill in the but, there was one case in which a friend of mine was able to have his aircraft stop at 40,000 feet or so and not continue operating as a normal aircraft. What was going on? I don't know. Does anybody know? We'll have to look into it. There have just been enough things like that have occurred I think there will be a lot of examination of what's going on over the course of the several months or maybe years, but maybe months to go.
And obviously you're talking about the secrecy around unidentified aerial phenomena and UFOs. Can I ask you to clarify, were you using an analogy or were you being serious that you had a friend that had an aircraft at 40,000 feet that mysteriously stopped?
I said it was, I have a friend who had been in an aircraft. 40,000 is not crazy. I mean, that's just all your pilots looking at this know that's not a wild and crazy idea. But I've talked to someone whom I respect who says that there was some event in which an aircraft was paused. And basically that's all I know about that.
Wow. I mean, you're kind of blowing my mind there. I really didn't expect that type of a story. And I appreciate you sharing that. Let me, if you don't mind, if I can stick with that topic, since we shifted a little bit from the JFK assassination, but talking about secrets and the CIA and so on. John Brennan, another former director of the CIA, had come out. And in fact, just to make sure that I have his quote right, and I wanted your reaction and maybe your overall thoughts on it. John Brennan had did a interview with George Mason University, and he was talking about UFOs and UAPs, and he was referencing some of the videos that have come out. I'm not sure if you're aware of those or watch them or anything, but called them quite eyebrow raising. And then he started talking about life in the universe. I think it's a bit presumptuous and arrogant for us to believe that there's no other form of life anywhere in the entire universe. Which was pretty interesting to hear a former director of the CIA talk about. John Ratcliffe, former DNI, he was interviewed with Fox News. He was talking about vehicles traveling that would exceed the sound barrier, excuse me, without a sonic boom. That interview got a lot of attention too. So can I add your name to the list of those that are speaking out about this? What are your overall thoughts about whatever that phenomena is, and what are we dealing with?
The only list I'm comfortable going on is one that would say these people have reported very curious behavior by aircraft, and it may be something real that is an extraordinary change for some unheralded reason, or it may be a complex set of different views of what's going on in the world of cyber and so forth. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. but I'm not as skeptical as I was a few years ago, to put it mildly. Something is going on that's surprising to a series of intelligent aircraft experienced pilots. And we'll just have to
see what it is.
See what it is.
Do you feel it's us? I mean, do you, in the sense that America is potentially testing something, and let's say the Navy doesn't know that the Air Force is testing technology, do you think it's Russia doing what they do best and trying to, you know, taunt us and in various ways? Do you have a theory in that regard? Because you had mentioned you're not as skeptical as you were a couple years ago. What did you mean by that?
Just that I have been not in the presence of, but I've been in conversations with several individuals who have been close to an aircraft performing in an extraordinary fashion that performs in a fashion that has not yet come to be something that people are comfortable with or expecting to see. That's about as far as I'd like to go.
Sure.
Which is openness to new things, willingness to examine them, hope that we can be friendly and able to deal with a wide range of behaviors in terms of dealing with our fellow human beings or with other creatures if they exist. I think we ought to be open to new possibilities. Some new possibilities are frauds. Mm-hmm. I don't think this one is, but over history, there have been a lot of frauds, we could have another one. I don't think so.
It's a fascinating topic. I want to veer transition back to your book, but if I can just ask you one last question, because this actually ties into a personal connection I have with you. I don't expect you to remember it, but about a decade ago, I was producing a television series for the History Channel, and your name, as I'm sure you recall this part, had turned up into kind of UFO legend. And I had talked to your office as a producer. We were looking to interview you then. And your office had informed us that the story we heard was not real. And so we didn't pursue it and respected that. But I know that my audience would want me to ask you this about a alleged briefing by a doctor who wrote about it in a book and said that he sat down with you and he was a briefer of UFOs. For you when you were the sitting director. So again, just for my audience who's not aware of the rebuttal, is there any truth to that story that you were briefed on UFOs when you were sitting director?
I remember the doctor, I thought he was articulate and seemed to be bright. This was after I was in the CIA job, I believe. Not while.
Forgive me. I had kind of recalled it while you were director. I apologize.
I think that something like that did occur because I remember a doctor writing about his meeting with me and sounding much more definitive than I remembered the discussion. And so I was, you know, not mad. I just said, well, he was pushing the envelope much more than I would like to see it pushed or believe it could mm-hmm. be pushed. But I'd be willing to have the doctor show up these days and give you a call if you want it and see what people say.
Well, very good. Well, I appreciate all of the information on that. Let me transition back to what we were talking about, the secrecy around the assassination and your book, Operation Dragon. Recommend everybody to go buy it. I've got links to it in the show notes. If you're listening to the audio version, it's www.theblackvault.com/show notes. I'll link you right over to the ambassador's book. You can purchase that. I highly recommend you do so because you go into a lot of detail. You publish even letters from Oswald and kind of decode a lot of stuff in a very cool color insert in the middle of the book. So I highly recommend everybody to get that. Going back to the secrecy, though, in your opinion, and again, more of the topics in your book, do you believe that there will be a time where either the CIA or the U.S. government as a whole will just say, okay, look, here it is. Here is everything we have on the assassination, truly 100%. You guys figure it out. Do you think that we are getting to that point?
I'm not sure yet, but if we get close to it, we ought to get up to it with a sense of both friendliness and skepticism. And we shouldn't neglect either one. We should not get into a mode in which we say only idiots could come up with a crazy damned idea like this. But we also shouldn't get into the mode of saying, hey, this is cool. It's really exciting. Yeah, let's go. No, I mean, no on both of those counts. Let's let the scientists and engineers examine, assess, play it straight, and see if there's anything out there that we all would want to know about.
But in relation to like the JFK assassination, is that what you mean as well? Because that's what I mean with the question is, do you feel that these documents and the information that's still being withheld, I mean, that's a documented fact, regardless of Trump's direction, not necessarily an order, but his request, I think it was tweeted out, but he said declassify everything. Essentially, that didn't happen. That's what I mean is, do you feel that we will see those records?
Everything about UFOs?
No. I'm sorry. The JFK assassination.
Oh, everything about the JFK assassination. Well, the job I once had for a couple of years has always made me kind of worried about the idea of saying, let's decide first to declassify everything, and then maybe we'll fill in the blanks later. I tend not to start with let's turn everything loose, because sometimes turning something loose can be a bad idea. We might find out something that we know about now, and several other countries could know about it if we blabbed, and we don't want them to know about it because it could be very, very damaging to our national security. So I don't want to make a commitment to disclosure, but I do think we ought to have this kind of commitment to new ideas that people in the government who have dealt with these issues for a long time and dealt with them very skillfully. Bill Casey, the former director, is a good example. I think we ought to be cautious, but open in a limited fashion, open to understanding what's taking place.
Very good. Well, sir, I could talk to you all day, and I really appreciate your time. I know you've been very busy with publicizing the book, but again, that resume of yours, you're quite active in quite a few areas right now. So I really do want to say thank you for your time today and your book, Operation Dragon, which I highly recommend. So thank you very much for that.
John, many thanks. Good to be with you.
Thank you. And thank you all for listening and watching. This is John Greenwald Jr. signing off. We'll see you next time.